I'm Sterling BF at the Heart of the Arts in the Valley of the Sun on KBOC. We often hear an artist play thanks to recordings. We can also hear and see an artist in live performance. But the Red Rocks Music Festival is giving us a chance to experience music and the artist in a different way this Saturday at the Sedona Creative Life Center at 7:30 in the evening and Sunday at Temple Chai in Phoenix at 3 in the afternoon. Pianist Ina Falix is a professor and head of piano at UCLA. Music has been a part of the Ukrainian artist's life from childhood, and just a few years ago she began to develop what became a monologue with music that has been recorded and that she's now touring. Ina Falix is bringing this intimate yet bravura performance to the Red Rocks Music Festival this weekend. Polonaise Fantasy, the story of a pianist. It's the name of a recording and the concert. I had a chance to speak with Ina Falix recently about its beginnings and creation. I want to ask you this first because I want to get to the discussion about Polonaise Fantasy. Mm-hmm. I'm hearing something in the background. Is that something we could...
Sorry, I'm going to leave. I was watching the final round of the Tchaikovsky piano competition.
Ah!
But that's all right. I'm in another room now.
Are you recording it?
It's fine. It doesn't matter.
Okay, all right. I just played a recording of yours this morning, a Beethoven Polonaise. And I wanted to ask you about that, first of all, great CD, but before we get to your performance here with the Red Rocks Music Festival, about playing Beethoven, we all think we know him so well, and yet usually when you study a person's solo music, you get to know them more intimately. Beethoven, most people know as a symphonist, but that wonderfully intimate kind of piano, and what's it like to discover that music?
Well, you mean specifically the C major Polonaise. So it's kind of funny. You should ask, you know, of course, Beethoven, for us pianists, he wrote the Bible of the piano, which is the 32 sonatas. And to me, I guess I could say that Beethoven's one of my absolute, I don't know, not just greatest loves, but the most important thing in my life, in a way, as a musician. You know, and I feel like I really have something special to say through Beethoven when I play Beethoven. But having said that, I think the Polonaise is kind of a funny little piece. It's very fresh, it's joyful, but you know, some people might think it's not as deep. It's obviously just a charming dance. And he wrote it because it's kind of a funny story. He wrote a violin sonata for a Russian countess, and then she didn't pay him for a really long time. And then he said, well, how do I remind this royalty person that she needs to pay me? So he wrote her this little piece to be like, hey, remember me? So it's just, it's a real gesture, and it's kind of a tongue-in-cheek gesture. And I think that that side of Beethoven we get to touch quite rarely, because everything is monumental and deeper than deep. So this is fun, and it's charming, and it's playful, and it's another side of him. That's the crucial side, I think.
Well, we're going to get to hear you here in Arizona in the Red Rocks Music Festival in September. Play something I'm assuming is very intimate to you and very personal. I know it's something that started as a story, Polonaise Fantasy, the story of a pianist. How did this all come about?
It's interesting. When I was pregnant with my son, I had to withdraw from a concerto performance because it happened to be about a week before my due date. And so they had to reschedule me for the following summer. And so I was kind of sad because I really wanted to play. I was fully prepared, but I agree it would have been kind of crazy. So I was in my New York apartment and I started writing a book, and just for lack of anything else to do when you're sitting there in the last 2 weeks of your pregnancy. So I started writing down memories of my childhood in Odessa, and these were all always very important to me and I think formative to me as an artist. And so as these were turned to a book, I just decided we'll see where this goes. When I moved to Los Angeles with my family from my UCLA position, somebody read a few of these chapters, a wonderful producer in LA named Cynthia Komsky. Cynthia suggested that we make this into a monologue recital and present it as part of her series with this wonderful actress, Rebecca Muzo. So we did that, and Rebecca played me, and I played the piano. And then we recorded this on CD for the Delos label. And then after that, I performed a premiere of this at the Newport Festival. And somehow the audiences reacted stronger when they saw me reading the text as well as playing. the piano because it's my story. So I started doing it this way, and it's been just incredibly gratifying and very, very joyful, and indeed the most personal thing, because it really is a very, very personal story.
I have seen some of it on web pages and on YouTube, and it is. It's remarkably intimate, and that chance to get to know not only the music through a musician, but more about the musician we know so well. But I'm curious, how did you come to pick the pieces of music that are part of this? I mean, you open with some music that's not going to be terribly familiar, and there are things all through it that people will say, oh, I love that piece. But how did you choose mm-hmm. these pieces?
Well, a lot of these pieces were seminal to me in my development as an artist, and just pieces that I learned as a young child. Others are pieces that I play a lot, but that I've learned later. But I think they fit very well into the narrative, into the emotional, the story that the narrative tells. There's a definite emotional connection. So, for example, La Campanella fits very directly with what's happening because I learned it with Emilia D'Alessario, my teacher, about whom I speak in the first part of the monologue. And so when I talk about, you know, the endless hours of practicing and the quest for perfection, and then I play La Campanella, well, that's exactly what it was like. I was learning it when I was 12 or 13 years old. And, you know, my teacher was incredibly demanding, and it has to be absolutely perfect. And so, you know, this quest for perfection and the drudgery of discipline involved in that, I think is something that this piece exemplifies in the narrative. Also, for example, I talk about Bach and how my great-grandmother practiced Bach with me when I was a little girl in Odessa. And then I play a prelude and fugue. Well, so that's not a prelude and fugue, of course, that I played at age 6. But it just exemplifies that moment and of the sound that I talk about in the story and just the mood of the moment, I think. So it goes both ways. Some pieces are really quite literally illustrative of what's going on in the story, and others are just kind of emotional components.
It's fun to see Chopin followed by Gershwin, at least in the list that I'm seeing here, a couple of Gershwin pieces.
So that I should correct that. So in the actual performance, this is on the CD, but in the live performance, so the second half you see in front of you, I actually do Beethoven. So I'm glad you asked me about Beethoven early on, because what I do in the live performance is the Beethoven Bagatelles, Opus 126. And they're really neat because, first of all, it's amazing music. It's the last thing Beethoven wrote for the piano. And they're both childlike and humorous and in some cases quite violent and searching and experimental. So strange and wonderful music. But on the other hand, the second half is sort of romantic comedy bit of the monologue. You know, it's a love story, and there's a lot of comedic elements to it. And so the Beethoven, the mood shifts are very, very immediate and contrasting. So from one piece to the next, you know, they're completely different. And they illustrate perfectly those moments in the story. In that kind of romantic second half. So I actually think for a live audience, this is even a better fit than what's on the CD, which on the CD, I think it works very well because it's a recording. But I think that the Beethoven fits in the live scheme of things, if that makes sense.
It does. And you mentioned playing with your grandmother. So music has been a part of your family life, all of your life,
yes.
Right?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
Is it now with your children? Are they musical or...?
Yeah, my son plays the violin, and it's a joy to see how musical he actually is. So who knows where it's going to go, but he loves music, and I just took him to his first opera, La Traviata. A couple of weeks ago, I played Rhapsody in Blue, and he was in the audience, and ever since then, he's nonstop singing Rhapsody in Blue. He loves this piece. He picks it out on the piano. He finds the tunes on the violin. So he's very responsive to music, but he's good at different things, so we'll see what happens.
Well, isn't that the point, though? Even if our children don't become musicians, that it can inform everything else they do for the rest of their lives.
That's all that I want for them. I just want them to love music. I mean, my daughter just started piano little by little. Not with me, but I think it's very difficult and kind of a terrible idea to to try to teach your own children.
Well, and as a teacher, I mean, you're the head of the department there at UCLA, and... Mm-hmm. You have your own studio, I'm assuming.
Yes, that's I have 13 wonderful piano students.
You have how many?
I have 13 piano students in my studio.
That's a big studio.
It's average. There are a lot of people who have many more. I'm like, yeah, this is as big as I would like it to get. But I am head of the piano department at UCLA, and I'm very lucky because the students are all very intelligent, very different personalities, and like an extended family, in a way, is how I treat the studio.
Well, that's one of the gifts of music. It does exactly that, from your original family to the family you raise, and then the family that are your students.
Yes, exactly.
I wanted to ask about one piece that I don't know at all. And it's the Friedland, the ballade. Is that the ballade
the
in black
Friedland,
and white? Is
yes.
that in the performance?
Yes. So the ballade in black and white was written for me. And so that's why you never heard it. Because nobody else plays it. But it was written for me by Jan Friedling, who was my composition teacher when I was a child in Odessa. And then we reunited many years later in Israel when I came to visit him. And so to mark this reunion, he wrote this piece for me. So it's a very special piece.
When I look at the musicians who are here, Bach, famously a teacher, Beethoven had students, and Chopin, Paganini, Liszt, that continuum of sharing what you've learned, how much of your teachers do you bring to these performances? How much we learn about with whom you studied and what you got from them?
This performance specifically is a big part of it is dedicated to my teacher, Emilio Del Rosario. He's a huge part of the story in the first half. And in fact, the Polonaise Fantasy is the centerpiece of the story. And I don't want to, without giving it away, it's probably the most difficult moment for me to get to, because when he dies, he asks me to play this piece on his deathbed, and I haven't learned it at that point. So I couldn't do it for him yet. And then I play the piece and I say, I wish I could have played it for him when he indeed had asked. So in a way, this is a memorial to him. And it describes in great detail my formative years with him. And of course, after him, I had many, many amazing teachers. And, I love all of them and I'm grateful to all of them. Incredibly different, all these musicians, and some of the most renowned ones in the world. But Mr. Del Rosario, as we all called him, Mr. D, he was that teacher who molded me from age 11 to age 18, and these are really formative years for piano. In this show, the audience gets to find out about him.
You're not old enough yet, but I wonder, it'd be fun to talk to you in several years, I'm sure, when you have students coming back to you who've gone on to great things or whatever they've done with their lives who remember what you gave them. Maybe you've already had that.
Well, I'm close to, I have some students who are, who graduated who I'm actually quite close to, and they're, they're friends now, and that's quite wonderful.
Well, it's a wonderful way to get to hear you sharing your life story and the music that means so much to you and to your teachers. I wanted to ask you, too, do you know the pianist Sandra Shapiro?
We've been in touch over the years. I haven't met her, but I think she had been to the festival. Is that correct?
She had it. She did a similar, I'll just say similar, in that it was a life-revealing kind of evening of music and commentary. Mm-hmm. So this is going to be wonderful for our audiences here to get a chance to hear your story now, through music especially.
Well, how fantastic. I think more and more people are leaning towards this mode of communication with the audience, because that borderline between, the stage and the audience, it's difficult to maintain and unnecessary, in my view. And I think music is about sharing, and there's nothing in it that's pretentious or elitist. And I think some of the problems that we encounter losing audiences and such comes from this misconception. So I'm very glad that so many people are doing these sort of personal stories and revealing programs that go deeper and that go into revealing a performer to the audience. I think that just bridges that gap.
Yeah. I look forward to meeting you, and thank you for the wonderful recordings.
Thank you so much.
And I look forward very much to this performance, and I'm sure audiences here as well do.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Ina Folix will be performing Polonaise Fantasy, The Story of a Pianist, this Saturday at the Sedona Creative Life Center at 7:30 and Sunday at Temple Chai in Phoenix at 3 in the afternoon. For tickets, go to redrocksmusicfestival.com. At the heart of the arts in the Valley of the Sun, I'm Sterling Biaf for KBOC.